Welcome back to Bull Droppings. I'm Josh McSwain here with my co-host AJ Torres, and today we're going to discuss a disappointing result in week five. One that might have been encouraging, but still at the end bites a little bit. Then we got Anthony Miller being cut just not long after being acquired by the team, was here for a cup of coffee, and now he's gone. Like the meme of South Park, Anthony Miller joined the team, and he's gone. And we'll talk a little about the Mills-Tyrod situation, then look ahead to this week's matchup against the Colts in Indy. And just to throw this out there, FTC, you know it all, what it means. So let's just get into Sunday's matchup that was against the Pats. Obviously, very encouraging performance by Davis Mills. Neither of us were very optimistic. So when I saw him having a couple touchdown passes in the first half, over 200 yards, I was just like, what? I don't believe it. He ended up finishing the game with 312 yards, three touchdown passes. A lot of it came on the 67-yard touchdown pass to Chris Moore. And effectively, I can say that we were able to utilize other options in this game. Belichick, as he always does, takes away your top threat and makes the rest of the team beat him. And this team actually showed like it was capable of doing that, because Brandon Cooks did not have a great day with only three catches for 23 yards. Didn't find the end zone, but Chris Moore, Chris Connolly both stepped up. Defense had a pretty respectable day as well. Limited Mac Jones just 231 yards. And while the Pats did rush for 126 yards, it was only 4.2 per carry, which is not utterly terrible. So the fact that we blew a lead, though, that's just disappointing. Because in the moment, you just want to win these games, you know, even if it is a rebuilding year.
Correct. It's not, and particularly if you're living in Texas, losing a football game, regardless of the cost or the reward, doesn't sit well with anybody. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, of course not.
Absolutely. Not want to be, you know, one of those old rare fans that beat each other up in a parking lot to say, just win, baby. But nobody likes losing, let's be honest. And
no.
To be fair, we knew that the Texans' defense was not great against the run, and the Patriots ran over them. Well, they stomped on like stairs, let's be real. But if you think about everything that went on, right, I didn't expect Long Neck to throw three touchdowns against the Patriots. I thought Bill Belichick would do a little better job of really keeping them in check. And by Long Neck, I mean Davis Mills, of course. You've seen the memes by now.
Yes. Mike Glennon 2.0. Let's hope his career turns out a little better.
Oh, the pain. But
the pain.
Yes. Bring me to church, brother. But anyways, if you think about it, you want to know what the main reason that they lost this game is, if you really think about it?
Enlighten us.
Kicken had 5 points left on the board.
That is a very good point right there.
If you think about it, one missed field goal, two extra points missed. That's 5 points left on the board. And think about it. That's huge. I mean, that one field goal ties the game. Do I think this gets lost in overtime? I don't know. But 5 points left on the board for a kicking is huge. But if you looked at week five as a whole, it was not a great week for kicking.
Nope. I saw part of the comedy of errors that was Green Bay and Cincinnati.
I watched that whole game, and let me tell you something. Painful.
I can imagine.
Mason Crosby's a veteran, looking like Adam Vinatieri, getting more silver with time, and then the Bengals have somebody inexperienced. I mean, come on. It wasn't fun. I was picking up freaking pizza and watching that thing go into overtime, and I'm thinking to myself, this is a disgrace. But moving forward, I'm very happy of the end result, because you could say that what you want, that, hey, there's a bunch of expatriates on the team. However you want to put it, right? The rushing on the ground wasn't bad by Ingram. Lindsey didn't get enough carries. I mean, averaging, you know, 4+ yards. About 4 yards.
Actually, I should stop you right there. If you're talking about the Texans rushing attack, it was not very good. Ingram led with 41 yards on 16 carries. That's under 3 yards a carry.
I know.
As a team, 67 rushing yards on 24 carries, an average of 2.8 yards per carry. Rushing attack for the last few weeks has been bad.
I know that this is one of the worst rushing attacks in the NFL. I'm just saying, if you go by the yardage, that is much better than I thought it would be. That is the only point I'm trying to get at. And nobody expected Long Neck to throw for over 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. So it's not the head coach. It is just the Patriot team that has lacked talent for so long, and it needs to be rejuvenated. So for 2 years, Bill Belichick is just trying to manage. Last year it was the quarterback. This year it's everything. And you can easily tell by that too.
Yeah, it really is him putting pieces together, but he always manages to put out something competitive. I just find it really interesting that they only beat the Buccaneers by 2 points in the Brady reunion game. Then they come down here, and then they only win by 3 points. Do you think maybe it was just like an emotional letdown week? Like after all the hype about Brady coming back and just the short week because of the late game Sunday, do you think that that affected the Patriots in this game?
You know, I'm unsure about that.
I really was too. I mean, I just kind of thought, you know, all the hype kind of happened. If the Patriots had gotten the win over the Bucs, then I definitely could have seen more of a letdown, but the fact was they didn't.
Yes. And also, without film, which the important players on this in this game, not a lot of film on these guys in comparison.
No.
You got a rookie quarterback and the MVP, my vote of the MVP of the game, Chris Moore. A little bit about Chris Moore, everybody who's listening. Baltimore Raven from 2016 to 2020, a little bit underneath the Cully regime. If you want to go by how many yards he had in his first 4 seasons, and we could count 2020, so okay, 5 seasons, just over 500 yards and 4 touchdowns, 5 catches, 109 yards and a touchdown. Wow. Even if you take that 67 yarder out, he still factored this game. However you want to put it, I'm actually glad that there's a weapon here, because we've kind of put through this roster and went try to diagnose this player by player, position by position. And Chris Moore was definitely not on our list. We were thinking, what's going to happen between Conley, Cooks? And we were going, hey, what's going on with the tight ends with Farrell Brown and Jordy Atkins? But now we have Anthony Eauclair, who had a touchdown, 11 yards. And if you're a fantasy football addict, you're going, scratch your head, going, who? Eh? What? He didn't make your team. He didn't even make the waiver wire. And here you are, Brandon Cooks, 3 catches for 23 yards. But if you look at the pieces around, can't complain. Got the job done. This was a team that wasn't supposed to be even competitive. But outside the Buffalo game, every single game that you've turned on, they've made it interesting.
Yeah, we certainly see no quit in this team. It was just, yeah, they were overmatched. And I think we all kind of anticipated that going into it. Just Buffalo is just on another level, talent-wise. And they showed once again in Kansas City this week that they aren't messing around this year. Brian Dable and Josh Allen are really cooking up something good up there. So might be the team we see in the split. And if you didn't show up against that team, like, I guess it's not good, but it's like, well, hey, they won the conference. Well, assuming they do, of course.
Let's also not forget that right, this is a
Super Bowl. I'd say Buffalo's team. The beat.
Yeah. I think they are the absolute team to beat. I think they're the Super Bowl favorite as of now. Now, mind you, it's week six, and then one injury could happen. And I wrote them off completely as a team because I actually thought that a COVID restraint would actually bite them, believe it or not. But however you slice it and dice it, that's just the ultimate team right now. You beat a Super Bowl team, and I'm ranking them number one right now. And the Cardinals number two, just simply because they're undefeated.
It's hard to say on that. But back to the Texans for a minute. This was the Davis Mills that I was at least expecting to see after I watched him in the preseason. It looked like he had a good arm and could make a lot of the throws. And overall, he made pretty good decisions. Obviously, still had some room to improve on that. Yeah, he was a little bit of a liability for holding on to the ball too long. And just, I will say New England's pass rush is not what Buffalo's is. We both have to agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I'd have to say, solid effort that I'm content with. And as long as you're not getting him killed every week, maybe there's an argument for leaving him out there and helping him develop his skills. You don't want to do the quarterback seesaw thing where you bring Tyrod back and then maybe you throw Mills in later in the year. You don't want to turn into the Miami Dolphins, who couldn't make up their mind between Fitzmagic and Tua last year. That was just so stupid. But I'm not going to get on that soapbox.
Well, I'll just say this. If you want to get into a soapbox, if you want to go with Doe the Pain, let's just put it to you this way. There were a lot of Dolphin fans that were crying for Tua's name, not knowing that Justin Herbert was going to be nearly as good as he is. The fact that he's listed as a potential MVP candidate. Think about it.
Right, but you also have to factor in that you have different systems going on, and if you did exchange their places, would Herbert be what he is with the Chargers if he were with the Dolphins? I do not believe so. Would he be an improvement over what Tua has been? Well, obviously, I would say yes.
I'm going
but
by
I don't
talent
think
and health.
That he would be an MVP candidate with the Dolphins roster. Herbert on the Dolphins right now, not he wouldn't be doing the same thing.
He wouldn't be doing the same thing, but if you go by talent, if you go by health, he's a better player. But speaking of the quarterback seesaw, now this team I will say is very confusing because we're making tank job moves. But when David Culley says when Tyrod Taylor is healthy, he is the starting quarterback. When Davis Mills came off of a good game against a respectable team. So is this a development thing? Because if you ask me, it sounds like Tyrod is the better quarterback for us to win. But a lot of people are arguing that this is not a time to win because we need to tank.
Right.
Why tank and get rid of your players for bags of balls and then go out and try and win every game the best way you can? That's just not logical in 2021 football to do. I just don't understand that. The fact that you're trying to fight for a spot to be the best you can be And meanwhile, the Jets and the Giants are going to have a higher overall draft pick than you at the way that this is going. I just don't understand the logic. Do you have a problem with this? Tyrod starting over Davis Mills, no ifs, ands, or buts. Because I do.
Well, the only issue I would really have with it is just, what is your message and be consistent about it? If you want to say, hey, we want to give Mills every chance to develop, we don't, well, you're not going to say explicitly that you don't care about the result, but you just say, you know, developing your young quarterback is our highest priority. That's how they'd say it publicly. If that's your message, fine, do it. I mean, I totally get it. You're on a, in a rebuild, the rest of the otherwise. But if you're actually trying to be competitive, then, but yeah, like you've said, we'll trade away some of these other players, but so you're not going to leave Tyrod with anybody? I'm wondering if they're just going to try and ship Tyrod out and get some compensation for him. If there's some quarterback injury, that actually might be another play.
So, okay. How about we try another quarterback trade? This is a mock, obviously. This is just kind of a laugh. But if you're in full tank mode, question. Daniel Jones is concussed. And yes, if you look at Dave Gellman, his seat is so hot, it's glowing red. Joe Judge, his neck is potentially on the line. Daniel Jones, because of this concussion and because of his contract, of it being 4 years plus a potential option, could get a little bit of a pass, especially after the game he played where he threw like 400 yards. Is there a chance that Tyrod goes over to New York for a pick? That's the only thing I can think of.
That is a really interesting question.
I'm thinking about this
obviously
on the fly,
this
mind you, but
concussion
it makes sense.
Issue. Yeah, you, like you said, it could make sense. Obviously, I have not followed up on Jones's concussion problems. I don't remember him being frequently injured in college, but
a concussion is a concussion. And I saw the hit live, so I mean, he got hit in the back of the head and he face planted straight up on his helmet trying to go for the end zone. And the fact that he stood up and he stumbled and the refs are like, whoa, 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 dude, no. I mean, if you're a Giant fan, my heart goes out to you because that was a disaster of a game. That was bloodshed. And that was one of the games where people got hurt so badly and gruesomely that you just feel bad. You almost want to cry. That was suffering. That was not football. That was suffering.
Yeah. So the other thing about this potential trade is, what incentive do the Giants have to make it? Obviously, Taylor would be nothing more than a backup in an ideal situation for them. But like you've said, GMs trying to save their jobs can sometimes pull off moves that are not in the best interest of the franchise long term. And, you know, if they would get a pass for being like 5-11 in a, or I guess 5-12 now, in a year without their starting quarterback for some time, maybe that could happen.
It depends on how significant the injury is. I mean, the problem is that we lay off some of these concussions like they're just so nonchalant. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like a lot of people think that these thumb injuries or these finger injuries are no big deal compared to the concussion. We have no idea, and even though he could avoid contact all day long, we have no idea how long this is going to be. There's a protocol, and there's been so many times where I've heard of concussion stories with athletes where it's like, hey, I'm starting to ramp it up. I'm starting to jog on a treadmill, but I have to stop because I feel headaches and I feel dizziness. We don't know, and we're not going to play doctor less than a week after the injury to see what's going on. But if this was anything serious, I could see it. But other than that, I just don't know if I see Tyrod Taylor going anywhere.
That's fair. And like you mentioned, thumb injuries with Russell Wilson in Seattle. I don't know how much of an incentive it would be for them because if he's out a month, obviously you'd have to wait till Taylor was ready to play. Then he'd have to go up there and try and learn the playbook. And if that happens, if Wilson's back by that time, then obviously there's no reason for Seattle to make that move.
Now, that's another tricky thing as well, because if we go by the trades as far as Seattle itself, this is the team that had only, what, three draft picks last year? They
I
lack
can't
draft.
remember.
I think it was three draft picks. I think it was the least amount of draft picks they had. And if you look at this team, it needs to be rebolstered. So they need all the help they can. They can't draft. Or they can't, I'm sorry, trade a draft pick for a guy that's only gonna be there for a month or two. Maybe it's not a cup of coffee. Maybe it's coffee, a dinner, a glass of wine, dessert. But still, that to them is not worth it. And as much as they see it, I think the expectations are gonna drop down. You have to let Russell Wilson heal because if you ask me, there's no point in rushing him because he's going to be here for a while. If you look at this team, if you look at the schedule, you might just look at it just like the Chiefs and be like, you know what? You guys are a good team, but this year is just not it. We got to work on things. It's not a bad thing. But
Right.
outside of that, I really can't think of Tyrod going anywhere. Can you?
The other team that came to mind quickly was San Fran, just because you have Garoppolo hurt. Trey Lance looked very uneven in his first start against the Cardinals. I just don't know if Lance is truly ready. And of course, I don't know about Garoppolo's injury either. Of course, then that's a pretty crowded quarterback room to begin with. Then you have to ask yourself, if you're the 49ers, are you really trying to contend this year? Or are you trying to build for later on? Because do you feel like the rest of that 49ers team would be capable of making a deep run? Because I'm kind of iffy on that. I'm not even sure if healthy they'd be able to contend with the Bucs and the Rams. Dare I throw in the Cowboys? Okay, I'll throw them in now, but I know when you get to peak Cowboys, usually the roller coaster goes down.
Well, that depends on what week Cowboys we're talking to. This could be week 9. This could be week 12. Although, credit to them, the defense, sometimes it shows up, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
But speaking of defense, I think we'd go forever with the Tyrod talk. Let's go to week 6, and I am going to give you the X factor of this game. Granted, this is going to be a snooze fest if you want to watch a good game as a regular football fan that has no tie downs to this game. But if you want to see somebody have a day, the one thing that I am not confident in this Texans team doing, can they, will they, probably not, stop Jonathan Taylor?
You seem to have cast your votes, at least in a very implicit manner. Taylor has not been exactly what we thought he might be. Thus far, he has 327 yards on 73 carries,
But we
which is
know,
definitely not up there with the big leaders around the league are, as you might have guessed, Derrick Henry at 640, Nick Chubb 523, Zeke at 452. Okay, he's not too far back now that I really look at it in detail.
guess what
Jonathan
this team
Taylor
just
is
gave
ninth.
up last week? Look at what they.
Actually, Jonathan Taylor is ninth in rushing yards, but he's eighth among running backs because he has fewer than Lamar Jackson.
All right. But the bottom line is this. How many rush yards did they give up last week against the Patriots?
126, but only
And
4.2 per carry. That's not
okay.
too bad.
Okay, I'm just saying We know the passing game is shaky.
Mm-hmm.
We know that the secondary for Houston is the rare strengths that they have.
Right.
This is going to be between defense and I think who could pound the ball better.
Right. And the Texans also have to factor in that Wentz has not been bad this year by any means.
He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been great either. So let's see what he is on that day. So we know that this team, the backfield at least, can cover. Can you get a pass rush on him to make him sweat, to keep him uncomposed, to rattle him? And then the next part is you have a solid running back. And listen, it doesn't matter how many carries. Can you stop him? Can all four quarters, can you limit him? I'm not saying this is Derrick Henry. This is Jonathan Taylor. I'm just saying he is a threat.
Oh, for sure.
Don't lose sleep, but at the same time, do not let him speed up. Do not let him have an extra step if you can help it. Because if he wants to run 100 miles an hour off tackle, if he's got good blocks, see ya.
True. But actually, back to Wentz, this is his stat line for the year. 65.3 completion percentage, 1,322 yards, 7.6 average, 264.4 yards per game, 7 touchdowns, 1 interception. His overall passing yards are 14th in the NFL. So like you said, it's not eye-popping, but he has certainly been respectable this year. And honestly, I feel like the Colts are better than their 1-4 record suggests.
It is, but same thing.
The way that the only way the Texans are going to get a win in this game is if the Colts absolutely have a letdown after their dramatic loss on Monday night. I still couldn't believe the Colts didn't actually win that game.
It is very interesting on how football works. Also, another thing to keep in mind, we know this offensive line hasn't been great this year. Laremy Tunsil out an estimated 4 weeks because of a thumb injury. That is a low blow.
That it is.
And when you have Buckner, Leonard, and we haven't seen what Woody Pay can do yet to the full extent, but that pass rush just got a little more scary.
Certainly did. So I guess my final score prediction for this week, I am going to go Colts 27, Texans 13.
I'm going to go a little bit lower. I'm going to go 21-17 in favor of the Colts.
All right, and there we have it. Any final thoughts?
You think that it will come down to kicking in this matchup again, because also Specs had a little trouble as well.
Yeah, it's also true. But then again, you have Calais Campbell on the other side. That makes a difference. It's actually really funny. I was thinking on that play right before it happened. The Ravens got Calais Campbell. He's one of the best in the league at blocking kicks. And then he just breaks through and just bam.
That is a very good point. That's a solid.
So, yeah.
That all we got?
Yeah, I think so. My point is just missing at least one of those field goals can't be an indictment on Blankenship. So.
Oh, absolutely not. It's just a fair question, in my opinion.
Yeah. So that wraps it up for us, folks. Remember to check us out on Twitter at Texans Talk Pod. And on behalf of AJ Torres, I'm Josh McSwain. Thank you once again for listening. We'll see you next time.